Why should baseball matter to those interested in broader questions of historical change and cultural meaning? That's one of the questions Daniel Gilbert asks in the introduction to his new book, Expanding the Strike Zone, Baseball in the Age of Free Agency. What better time to examine that question than October, when baseball matters most? The author joins me in the studio. Daniel Gilbert, welcome to Only a Game.
It's wonderful to be here.
You write that we, quote, derive special significance from the triumphs and failures of baseball teams because they represent the places we imagine ourselves to be from. Why the use of imagine in that context?
Well, I think at a certain level, cities really are kind of imaginary communities. We're sitting here in Boston, and there are close to a million people in this city right now, and millions more around the world who somehow identify themselves as Bostonians. Those people don't know each other. You know, they
it means something to them, but something maybe in their imaginations more than in reality, I
guess.
Yeah,
and so it seems to me that baseball is one of those things, and baseball parks and baseball broadcasts are some of those places where people are able to imagine and live out those very real connections.
Speaking of the power of imagination, you say that baseball, and I suppose by extension other sports, traffics in the powerful fiction that corporate franchises can represent communities. Is that concept utterly an illusion?
I don't think it's entirely an illusion, right? I think there is a way in which when a team wins a championship, it wins that championship on behalf of the community in which it's based. What I'm trying to get at is this curious fact that teams have been able to extract such extraordinary public subsidies for building ballparks, mm-hmm. for example, mm-hmm. in an age of, you know, real budget crises.
So the illusion of it somehow trumps whatever economic reality may be associated with all of that subsidy.
I mean, there are much stronger economic arguments to building a structure that will be filled with consumers 365 days a year instead of 81.
You devote a large portion of Expanding the Strike Zone to the history of the Major League Baseball Players Association, which has been exceptionally successful in raising salaries, achieving free agency, and otherwise improving the circumstances of major leaguers, especially over the past 40 years or so. But doesn't the success of that particular association run counter to recent developments in labor history in general?
It does, in a real sense. And that was really one of the starting places for me of this project, you know, thinking about this curious union of professional baseball players having all kinds of success in their industry right at the moment when the rest of the U.S. labor movement has really run up on hard times. One of the moments that really interested me in the book was the summer of 1981, the summer that President Reagan fired the striking air traffic controllers in really one of the most devastating blows to the labor movement in recent memory. That same summer, the Major League Baseball Players Association were quite successful in their strike and were able to protect the system of free agency and win real gains for their members. And so that relationship between a union built on Major League ballplayer star power and the rest of the labor movement, I think, is really one of the most interesting things about recent baseball history.
Sort of wonder to what extent that was a function of the power of Marvin Miller.
Yeah.
I mean, if every union had a guy who was as tenacious as Marvin Miller was at that time when the baseball players got organized, maybe they'd do better.
Yeah, I mean, Miller is really, he's one of my favorite figures from the history of sports and the history of the labor movement, a guy who grew up in New York City, working class kid who graduated from NYU at the age of 19 and went on to a remarkable career with the United Steelworkers Union, and he gets hired almost by accident by a group of ball players in 1966, and brings that expertise and tenacity to the baseball industry. It's one of the great shames that he passed away last year before. Clearly, at some point, Marvin Miller will be in the Hall of Fame, and I hope, anyway, that he'll be in the Hall of Fame. It's too bad that
unless the owners are able to keep
right.
keep him out as they so far have been. Have ballplayers in other countries where baseball is very popular, Japan, for example, been successful in organizing and achieving salary increases and benefits through organization?
They have. There is a players association in Japan. They have done fairly well. The story in Japan is not one of the kind of I think, unbridled success almost of the players' union in this country. And there are also some fascinating histories, some of which I look at in the book, of players' associations in Latin America, a remarkable players' union in Mexico in the early 1980s that actually, after going on strike in 1980, the following season formed their own kind of rebel players' league, affiliating with other unions of other sorts of workers, and survived for a few years.
Daniel Gilbert, assistant professor in the School of Labor and Employment Relations at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, is the author of Expanding the Strike Zone, Baseball in the Age of Free Agency. The book is published by University of Massachusetts Press. Daniel, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Trabu. Our technical director is John Perotti. Our intern is Zoe Sobel, and our senior producer is Gary Wallach. Our final word comes from Humphrey Bogart, a.k.a. Private Detective Philip Marlowe, who says he just can't keep listening to the radio all day.
Well, I don't like it, but what can I do? I'm on a case.
Take a break, Marlowe. Go have a hot dog at the ballpark. A fellow named Bogart says it's better than a steak at the Ritz. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Support comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at GatesFoundation.org. The Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness on the web at MelvilleTrust.org. And the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world on the web at Hewlett.org. This is NPR.